Welcome to On Air with the Mountain Lion Foundation, broadcasting research and policy discussions to understand the issues that face the American lion.
Hello, I'm Julie West, your host. Thank you for listening to On Air with the Mountain Lion Foundation. My guest today is Gary Kohler, wildlife research scientist with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife from 1994 to June 2011. Gary's expertise includes 30 years of research on a variety of carnivores, including the cougar, black bear, Canada lynx, and snowshoe hare. He continues to participate in cougar and lynx research in Washington and advise projects concerning tigers in China and snow leopards in Mongolia. Now, for the past 8 years, Gary's been involved in Project CAT, a community outreach program that engages public school children, teachers, and the community with hands-on environmental educational opportunities and science fieldwork. Prior to his affiliation with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Gary served as former research associate with the Hornocker Wildlife Institute and senior lecturer at Moi University in Kenya. And additional biographical information for Gary is available on the Mountain Lion Foundation website. So, hello, Gary.
Hi, Julie. Good to speak to you.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us today. Now, I want to start by observing when there are increased news reports of cougar conflicts with humans or cougar livestock and pet encounters, it seems the common assumption is that, cougar populations must be growing. And people can really panic about this, you know, get your guns out, But your research suggests that there's more to this story than meets the eye, and that this is actually maybe a misnomer, that poorly designed hunting policies might be triggering this increase. What are you finding, and how can you address this public perception?
Julie, in Washington State, we've studied cougars here over a decade, and we've looked at cougar populations in five different areas, very, very distinct ecotypes in the state. And what we've done, this long-term research was really unique and instrumental in unraveling some of the mysteries about their populations and how they respond to hunting. And what we've found in one area where we had studied cougars and where the community participated in this process called Project CAT, Cougars in Teaching, the area was received a relatively low harvest rate of about 10% per year. And the cougars, like elsewhere in the West, can live in close proximity to people, particularly where in developed areas, and in fact, that's what they did there. And there was very few people complaining about cougars.
Okay.
That low harvest rate resulted in an older age population, and the animals there were able to go about their lives and regulate their own numbers, you know, the way they evolved with territoriality and dispersal of young male cougars that were born in the area. And then we looked at cougars, a cougar population in the northeast part of the state, where the harvest rate was more than double that. It averaged about 23% per year. And as a result of that, this resulted in a quick turnover of the population. Average age of the cats there were about half that of the other areas with a low harvest Project CAT study area. The average age was about 3 years old, where the cougars were harvested intensively, in contrast to 6 to 7 years old, where there was a lower harvest rate. And as a result of that, when you continue high pressure like that, you're creating these territorial vacancies. You're creating an opportunity or a vacancy where young dispersal age cats, inexperienced cats, are going to have an opportunity to find a vacancy and set up their own territory. So the population where area where harvest was high was made up of younger age animals, dispersal aged animals that found a home. And also what happened there, the high harvest really disrupted the social organization of particularly for the males, rather than being exclusively territorial and had exclusive areas and parsing out the landscape, the cougars, these young age cougars, their home range areas were much larger than in the control where the harvest rate was low, and like 2 to 3 times as large. And the cats were basically, the males were basically stacked upon each other. And so there's increased opportunity for, if you lived on a site in the northeast part of the state, that you could be visited by 3 different resident or establishing cougars, male cougars, where if you have an area where their harvest rate is low, that would be the domain. Your area might be the domain of one male cougar. So the probability of encounter basically goes up and also these cats are inexperienced hunters. Mm-hmm. They haven't had the experience living around people. And they're kind of like juvenile, you know, inexperienced people or a variety of other mammals, including
teenagers,
ourselves.
Teenagers.
That's true. The inexperience plus, higher probabilities of encountering people leads to a potential for increased conflict, increased complaint.
So the key really does hinge then on, it seems like, if I'm understanding you correctly, the heavy hunting is taking out the older males, and the older males, so the population structure is shifting, and then you have these younger juvenile cats who need to establish their own territory, so they're more likely to come into conflict without the dominant male cat kind of keeping that social order intact.
That's correct. That's exactly what we found, and this was a unique study, and we were able to compare 2 different study areas with basically 2 different harvest intensities, and that's exactly what we discovered.
So when your data is this compelling, and that's not to imply it's not without controversy, because I'm sure it is, and that people are interpreting this in a number of ways, and maybe you can address that in a minute. But how can you then affect policy, or what's the next tier? Where do you take this data? Where does it go from there?
Well, here in Washington State, we are attempting to affect policy. We're trying to take this science and this understanding that we've found and to attempt to minimize or lower the harvest in any one particular area. What you create is an unregulated harvest structure or an area where, access is easy in the wintertime and hunters can get in, where there's lots of roads, and if you have snow, cougars are particularly vulnerable. And in these areas, you can create conditions for a high harvest rate or a high hunting mortality in an area with high roads, good snow conditions. And you can create a situation just like what we explained. And that population is going to be dominated by these young, inexperienced cats coming in and taking over vacant areas that were once occupied by older age resident male cougars. And so what we're trying to do is distribute the harvest or distribute the hunt effort on the landscape where, hunters don't necessarily go where the picking's easiest, where the road density is high, and where you've got good snow conditions, because cougars can be quite vulnerable under those conditions.
Okay. So you're saying that maybe state entities like the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife can dictate those parameters, can have a say in where those locations should be, and offer the cats to the hunters, but maybe not make them such easy targets.
That's correct. Basically, distribute the hunter harvest over a wide area so the hunters are not necessarily attracted to the areas where it's easiest to get a cat. I know everybody wants to be successful, but if you got areas with high road density and good snow conditions, you can seriously impact a cat, a cougar population. And with the result of, a whole change in the population structure and potential complaints going up.
Now, does that necessarily assuage fear? You still have public perception to deal with. How is that piece of it addressed?
Well, what we're trying to do, and this is true with a lot of agencies in the West, as well as private entities like the Cougar Fund, the Cougar Mountain Lion Foundation, is educating the public. And that's a very important part of all of this. And agencies are trying to step up and play that role as well. It would appear, at first hands, if there's more cougars being seen, that one would think, oh, there's got to be more cougars out there. But it may not necessarily indicate that. I saw a cougar just the other day on a hike here in the snow, and obviously it was a young cat, and cats are curious, and the old adage, curiosity killed the cat, young cats are vulnerable, the young cats are curious, and very often that's what you see is a younger aged animal. It's not necessarily an increase in populations. In fact, cougars are very good with their territorial makeup of their population is spacing themselves out on the landscape so that they don't overwhelm the prey population. So there's a limit to the number of cougars that you can have on the landscape.
Yeah, what would happen if is it possible for the cougars, if you were to greatly back off on the hunting or greatly change the hunting regulations to give them a break, is it possible it could go the other way?
I don't think that there's a danger of cougars getting out of control. I think there's a good example of that is in California, where there hasn't been any harvest or public harvest of cougars. You don't get reports of cougars, overwhelming the landscapes in California.
Well, it does seem like so many things are stacked against them with highways and development and loss of habitat that those would be built-in ways of limiting their numbers already.
Yeah, basically what dictates cougar numbers is habitat and definitely is the prey, like prey numbers. So if you're going to lose habitat, you're going to lose prey, elk and deer, and that's going to impact cougar populations. And the downside of development, or particularly in cougar habitat or deer habitat, is often, as residents, we like to see deer, and so we attract them into, residential areas by things that we plant. We even provide food for them. We feel sorry for them in the winter, and that too leads to serious problems, because once you start attracting a major prey species like that, there's a potential for attracting a predator, and that predator in the deer range is a cougar. And so that is an area that it's not only habitat and loss of habitat due to development, but it can be that impact can be magnified by enticing deer into residential areas and having an impact on the cougar population by attracting, you know, the cougars into these residential areas.
And where does trophy hunting figure into this? That's for me, I think of trophy hunting as being in a unique category outside of hunting, but maybe it all stems from the same desire to, not always, but to sort of conquer and literally take the trophy from nature. That's a major contributor of decline in cougar populations, isn't it?
Well, it can be in some areas. I mean, cougars are a highly prized game species. There's few people that you know kill them for food, but they like to have them as a trophy animal. And but I think, you know, there is a certain amount of offtake, if you want to put it that way, or a hunting that you can permit in an area. And but the older toms, they're larger and they're bulkier, and they're a much more valued trophy than a young age cat or, you know, or a female. They're just bigger, you know, maybe twice the size of a female in weight, so they're the valued trophy. But the thing of it is when you're taking those trophy aged animals, those older males, which you're creating, you have the potential to create a population sink if you kill a lot of these large older males in an area, and you're killing off the older resident toms that have well established territories and kind of dictate the demographics in the you know the culture and the policy of cougar behavior. And so those older age animals, those trophy age animals, are a very important part of the population. They help regulate the numbers. They help force young age animals to disperse. And they basically regulate the numbers and of cougars on the landscape through territoriality. So they have a very important role in the natural scheme of things.
Well, it certainly makes sense that, you know, elders in our own human societies have played such a critical role in maintaining order and stability and passing on the traditional wisdom and knowledge. And why wouldn't it be so for the animal world as well?
It's definitely true. I mean, that has been documented very clearly in elephants. It's documented very clearly in a lot of our primate species in Africa and Asia, and, you know, a lot of our ungulate populations too. You know, they're matriarchal. The older cows pass on to the younger calves. You know, travel routes. So there is a culture in these animals, and these older animals do play a very important role and not only seeking out and showing the younger generation where to go, but in the case of cougars, you know, regulating the numbers of cougars on the landscape through territoriality.
How can the Department of Fish and Wildlife communicate to hunters, or what is an ideal goal in communicating to the hunters? You suggested one strategy of not making it so terribly convenient to get to the cats, number one, but how can someone resist taking out a big cat if that's their goal? And if, as you say, you know, trophy hunting, the bigger the cat, the better, knowing that bigger cat is likely going to be one of those older, mature elders who are needed. Can you limit the number of older male cats you can take out, or what are some ways to limit?
I think that's kind of the key, is limiting the number of older cats that are harvested in an area.
Yeah.
Basically, putting a limit or a quota on the number of of cats that are harvested on a particular drainage, particular game management unit or population management unit, whatever you want, whatever the management designation for an area it might be. Limit the number of animals harvested in a particular area. And I think a corollary to that is rather than create situations where cougars are more vulnerable because of good road access, and if you can distribute the hunt throughout the region, throughout the state, so you're not creating, you're not taking out of all of those older animals out of a particular watershed. So you might take one out of the watershed and leave two others, because that area that you will, that is occupied, that cat that is killed, it's going to be occupied by a young age Tom. He's going to come in and discover this vacancy and set up shop there. And it's those older neighboring resident Toms are going to basically confine him and say, okay, this is your territory, you stay there. But if you take out all the Toms in this area, then what you're going to do is you're basically creating a social chaos in there and a potential for turmoil, as we discovered in the northeastern part of the state where we studied cougars.
Well, what you propose is so reasonable and logical. In my way of thinking, what could the resistance to that possibly be?
Well, I think some of the resistance is that I think, with most state agencies, wildlife management agencies, we still have this idea ingrained in our psyche that cougars are indeed predators. So let's, they don't require any special management needs, or let's just harvest them. Let's not worry about, they're going to reproduce but I think it is what we're trying to deal with here, and what we got to convince is our own agencies is that, hey, there's a better way to manage, these large predators, particularly cougars, and that the evolution of the cat is all part of this, and this we need to be aware of, that behavior is, in this territoriality of these cats, is a unique thing about cougars, and not necessarily unique about cougars, but it's certainly characteristic of all of the cats, and that we should be aware of this when we're setting up a management strategy.
Well, it seems to me that these agencies, such as your own Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife that you were affiliated with so many years, they are working with research scientists such as yourself. They do have the benefit of this incredible biological knowledge, just by association of their partnerships and their own team members. So it must have been very challenging, but also hopefully rewarding for you to work within that system and to find that maybe their policies didn't always agree with you, but also to find that maybe you could help affect change from within that system.
Well, we are trying, and we've done that. We put a lot of effort in it, and Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife did sponsor most all of this research, or help sponsor most of the research that we've done in the state, as have the universities here, both WSU, Washington State University, and the University of Washington have been involved as well. So they are receptive, but there's still this notion in, some management people and personnel that, predators are different, and they're just considered, something different, vermin, and we have it's a it's a real challenge to try to change perceptions of carnivore, large carnivore management. We've so often considered them as predators, but we are making inroads. There are changes, but we also have to pass regulations and get the approval of wildlife commissions. We have wildlife commissions here in this state and elsewhere. Other states have them too. And so that is where the hunting public has a voice, and they're often reluctant to make some of these changes because they don't want their opportunities compromised. You know, we need to start applying the science and the ecology of these animals to our management.
Were you ever in a situation at conferences maybe, or where you could really get down into some serious debates with fellow game and fish colleagues?
Yeah, well, we did. You know, every 3 years or something, the agencies and non-governmental agencies have a program called the Mountain Lion Workshops. And so there, all of the agencies, state agencies, convene, and you have great opportunities to talk about that. We've, in fact, presented some of our ideas to the last mountain lion workshop, and that was this spring. And so they're aware of what we've done. They're aware of, you know, what can be done to better manage these. So, and also, you know, we do have dialogues with an exchange of ideas with other agencies, state agencies, and we have discussed this. And there's getting to be a greater receptivity to some of these ideas, but it's like any change. It takes a while, and you just have to be persistent and really present a convincing argument.
And again, the argument might not need to be so convincing for your fellow game and fish colleagues. Perhaps so, but it seems like the greater challenge would be their community of hunters, and maybe this idea that academia, the scientific knowledge is coming from the ivory tower of academia and doesn't really relate to the average person who just wants to have his gun and have free rein and wherever he wants to, and why should a scientist at a university coming up with data tell me what to do? I mean, do you think that those are just some real basic challenges?
There are those challenges. There are those, we have those same challenges within our own department, just as there is different philosophies within the hunting community. There are some hunters that are really receptive to these ideas we're talking about.
That's a good point.
Pardon?
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for mentioning that.
And within agencies, you know, there's some of the kind of the good old boy attitudes too that are tough to change. But the thing of it is, we're trying to get in this state has been demonstrated elsewhere, particularly in California, is the role of science in unraveling some of the mysteries of this animal and trying to implement some of these findings in the management. And so it's you know, we've got our own people to convince. There's you know, a lot of positive movement. I think we're all on the right track and we got the momentum, but it's not smooth sailing, you know, either with the management agencies or the hunting community. But there are people that get the picture and they understand a need to make some changes. And so
I was just reading a story in the news recently, I'm sure you know about it, of a hunter in Washington State who shot and killed a mother cougar and consequently orphaned her three kittens. And the thing is, the hunter said he knew it was illegal to shoot the mother. He was aware of her kittens, but that he shot her anyway. And it just seems that despite reason and the best efforts of yourself and others who are working toward achieving this balanced human-wildlife dynamic, there will always be examples of this blatant disregard for the law, and that you're really up against some deeply rooted entitlements to take at any cost. And that's frustrating, but I like then looking to your work with Project Cat and young people as being kind of the hope to that the restorative justice side of that. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that's going and how you're empowering people with this knowledge that you get.
Yeah, you know, I think Project Cat was it was an experiment, but it was, I think, a very successful project. And what I learned more than anything is the way to change attitudes with the community is through the kids in the schools. Where we had, with Project Cat, we involved, you know, anybody from the eighth graders and older. We took them out on these captures, and so they followed us around the woods and to capture animals. And so that knowledge that they gained and acquired from working with us.
Capturing them for the purpose of radio collaring them?
Radio collaring them and studying them and finding out, you know, what their relationship is on the landscape and how many animals, you know, what their predation ecology was and relationships of their use of space with where people lived. These kids had a firsthand view and a firsthand understanding of all of that because they've got to work there. And so they took that understanding home. They talked about it with their, you know, their extended family at Thanksgiving dinners. And in fact, it was a lot of these kids that made the greatest impact into that community, you know, telling their grandparents not to feed the deer because it's going to attract predators. So it was the kids that were the champions. They were the ambassadors in the community and had the most effect on changing attitudes about cougar ecology. And I think when we left there, that community was certainly supportive of Project Cat. Everybody, the community was deeply involved in it and really understood much better of the role of the cougar in their neighborhood and as part of their neighborhood. So it was the kids education through the schools and getting the kids involved that made a difference in that community.
Seems like we need a network of Project Cat programs across not only Washington but the Northwest.
Yes,
Southwest,
I think so. On a variety of topics, you know, cougars are one of them, but cougars are a very important one because they hold such, they're such a beautiful animal, but we still fear them, and just unlocking that mystery about the lives of cougars in that community and having the kids take that home, it really did make a big change in that community.
Very important work. Well, we're running out of time, but I do want to ask how your knowledge of big cats and wildlife management here in America is informing your research in countries such as Africa and China. Are
well,
there correlations in your findings?
There's the old adage, cat's a cat, and pretty much they are the most amazing and most sophisticated of the predators on our planet, most highly evolved. And pretty much they just come in different disguises, whether it's a tiger or a mountain lion or a lynx or a bobcat. They have a lot of those same patterns and those understandings of how snow leopards might relate to the villagers, and depredation on villagers' livestock is not a lot different than dealing with depredation issues here in the U.S. when it comes to cougars depredating on domestic goats or sheep, or, you know, for that matter, wolves. And I think that there's a lot that we can take home and apply elsewhere, you know, about the dynamics of predator communities and how we as humans live in these communities. So pretty much take that, a lot of that information, and transplant it elsewhere.
Maybe you could we could end with your sharing a story, if you'd like to, of one of your own encounters with a mountain lion.
Yeah, well, you know, it was just the other day, my wife and I, this Saturday, in fact, we decided we just had some fresh snow, and we went for a hike up to these little lakes above Wenatchee, and sorry, the dog is barking here. I'm going to step out.
You don't have cats?
No, I got neighbor cats that seem to enjoy me, and so we don't need a cat here because we've got cats all around us that come by. But you know, what is amazing to me is these cats, these cougars, they're so secretive. They're so stealthy, and they can be, you know, close by. You never see them there. You might see their tracks, but like I said, Saturday on our hike out from these little lakes, there was a movement off the side of the road as we were driving out, and my wife says, "I think that was a cougar," and so we stopped, and I got out, and I looked over there, and sure enough, this young cougar stepped out. It was a young animal just by its features, but it was not spotted, so it was, well, maybe, you know, a year and a half, 2 years of age. And that animal just stood there and watched us from not more than about 30 or 40 yards away, and it was so awesome. I've spent, you know, 15 years of my professional career working with these things, and I never get tired of looking at it. There's such an amazing and such a beautiful animal, and to be able to catch a glimpse, not to mention looking at one and looking at us, it was truly amazing.
Yes, well, thank you so much, Gary, for speaking with us today.
Well, it was my pleasure, and thanks you very much for giving me the opportunity. These are fascinating animals, and I appreciate you letting the public know about the role of these amazing animals.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. It's been a great conversation.
Hey, thanks. Take care.
All right.
This has been a Mountain Lion Foundation On Air broadcast. On Air is a copyrighted production of the Mountain Lion Foundation. Permission to rebroadcast is granted for non-commercial use. For more information, visit mountainlion.org.